You're listening to Radio Glamorgan.
My name is Andrew Wolfe, and I'm a volunteer with Hospital Radio Glamorgan. Prostate cancer is the most common cancer found in men, and unfortunately, one in eight men will develop prostate cancer at some point in their lives. There is an increased risk if you're aged over 50 of Afro-Caribbean ethnicity and have a father or brother who has been diagnosed with it. The prostate is the size and shape of a walnut and is situated under the bladder in men. Prostate cancer behaves very differently in different men. In some men, prostate cancer can grow very slowly, often with no symptoms at all, whereas in others, it could grow quickly and is therefore more likely to spread. Prostate cancer is not always life-threatening, and as with most things, the earlier it's diagnosed, the better the outcome and the greater chance of being cured. Most symptoms associated with prostate cancer are the same as those that are related to normal age-related prostate enlargement, BPH, and not actually prostate cancer. These symptoms include frequency, passing urine more often than usual, reduced urine flow, getting up at night to pass urine, incomplete bladder emptying, dribbling after you've finished passing urine, and not being able to hold on when you feel the need to pass urine. Specific symptoms associated with prostate cancer include most of the symptoms I've mentioned, but in addition, more worrying symptoms include blood in the urine, weight loss, and back or pelvic pain. There is very useful risk checkers online, which can be obtained via Prostate Cancer UK. Joining me today from his home in Tame in Oxfordshire to talk about his recent experiences of prostate cancer is my brother David. David, you were 63 when you were diagnosed with prostate cancer, but I want to ask you first about the build-up to that. Were you fit and healthy?
Hello, Andrew.
Hello.
Just to add to those figures that you were giving, it affects about 52,000 men a year, prostate cancer, 12,000 of whom can die from it. So, you know, it's quite, when you say it's quite a common cancer, it is quite a significant cancer that can, you know, that can kill you. So, you know, getting it checked is quite important. So from my experience, I didn't have any symptoms at all, or not that I was aware of anyway. I think looking back, my urine probably had slowed down a bit. I was getting up once in the night, which, you know, most men find pretty normal. And I just, you know, I just thought, you know, there's nothing wrong with me, but I'll get it checked. Okay, because it's so important to get it checked. And you hear, you know, you hear all these people, you know, they're all banging on about, you know, the silver badge brigade with the little men badges of going, get tested. But seriously, it is, you know, it can be detected early, it's a lifesaver. It can be a lifesaver. Okay, so I went for a test. I just thought, I'm over 60. You know, I should really get it tested. I went along. I think I was having a routine blood test anyway. So I just said, can you just, you know, take a little bit more and give me a PSA test, which they agreed to, the GP. And yeah, it turns out I've got it.
So what have you gone through since the day that results needed further investigation?
So I went for the test. So the test is literally just a little prick, okay? That's all it is. It's just a little, you know, a little jab in the arm. If you get regular blood tests anyway, then you know what that's like. They just take a little bit. If you don't, then, you know, if you think of it as your COVID jab or your flu jab, then, you know, that's all it is. The crook of your elbow a little bit. All done. 2 minutes, go home, okay? But it's so important. So I was diagnosed. Sorry, my results were... I had a test that came back at 5.4, okay? No, sorry, it was 6.0, the first one, okay? Which is high, because anything above about 4 when you're over 60 is a figure that they kind of look at and they go, yes, it might be a problem, sir, okay? So then 3 weeks later, you go back and you have another PSA test so they can, you know, confirm it might be a little bit high. And I think the second time it was 5.4, which was a little bit lower, but still high. Okay, so there's concern. There was concern. Okay, so the next day, you know, they're not just going to say, right, you've got prostate cancer. They're going to take further checks. So you go away for a, they refer you for an MRI scan. Okay, which if you've never had one of those, it's like lying on a bed and getting drawn into a great big washing machine. That's what it looks like. You can see pictures of it. And that will tell the medics that, you know, yes, there's something there that definitely needs looking at. Okay. It takes a 3D image of around the pelvic area, and they can see, you know, they're pretty good at knowing what they're looking for. So I have that, and then after that, they said, yes, there's definitely something there. So the next stage was a biopsy, okay, it's probably, a biopsy is probably best described, to me, it's like, you feel like a sort of old Ford Escort up on a ramp, and there's an engineer underneath who's pushing and prodding your manifold a bit. Yeah. So, you know, that's not painful. Some people think that's painful, but it's not. You get a local anesthetic. It's uncomfortable, but, you know, they take samples from your prostate and send it away for testing, and then they can definitely say, yes, it's cancer, or no, it isn't. So that's what I've been through, and it's definitely cancer. So then... what happens then is you get a round of consultations on what to do, okay? And they take scores from the biopsy. I think it's, I'm not going to get this wrong, but I think it's a score of 1 to 5, and I was a 3, which is somewhere in the middle. And I was just on the cusp of being risky, which means that I got to do something about it, okay? So... they talk you through various options. If they don't think it's risky, you can actually live with it, and they'll monitor it. You know, they'll have regular PSA tests, regular biopsies, and you don't have to do anything about it, and it'll sit there and be quite happy. If it's risky, then that's when it can break out of the prostate, because the cancer is normally contained within it. If it gets risky, it can start to break out of the prostate, and that's when you're in real trouble, because that's when it starts to spread around the body and can attack other organs. So I was on the edge of being risky, so I've decided, yes, I've got to do something about it. And then the round of consultations is the different methods they have to treat you, which is different sorts of radiotherapy or surgery. And I've opted for the surgery, which will be next week.
Was that your choice?
Yes. So they don't try and persuade you either way. Okay, they're very good. You see a consultant about the therapy, you see a consultant about the surgery, and they give you the pros and cons of each, and they just let you go away and make your own informed decision. And there's lots of documentation. You can find stuff online, but they give you lots of documentation about the you know, what to expect, what happens after, and you know, how you're going to live with it after. You've got plenty of time. They were not rushing me to make a decision, but you know, I knew I wanted to get something done about it, so I called them up and said, that's what I want to do.
And why did you opt for the op, as it were?
I just thought, well, again, it's a personal decision, but I just thought, get rid of it, you know. But that's my choice. Other people might be quite happy just to have the therapy and not undergo surgery. That's you know, you have to go through those discussions and read the documents and say, right, let's see what I really want to do. So that was my own personal decision.
Well, one thing I find interesting, and maybe as laymen, neither of us can answer this, I don't know, but your cancer was localized, it hasn't spread. They've given you the options. They're not pushing you. They're in no hurry. But was there any danger in that time that it might start spreading, or can they look at it and say, no, it's going to stay where it is?
I don't know. It's probably the answer. But obviously they weren't that worried about it, but it was a risk. I've just actually just had about a week before I'm due to have the op another MRI scan. Whether that's to see whether it has done anything worse, or whether it's so the doctor can remember, the surgeon can remember where it is. I don't know.
Yeah, that would help.
So, I mean, that's what I'm going to do. But I just to go back and say, I mean, you know, it's that test is so important, that PSA test, and they don't the NHS don't offer it by routine. You know, they'll offer you bowel cancer tests by routine, and you know, you get blood tests when you get to a certain age. But the PSA test is not routinely offered, and there's reasons for that. I think the main reason being that it's not 100% reliable, okay, and it can start to ring alarm bells and people get really worried when actually there's nothing wrong. Because they then take you back for another one, and then you get an MRI scan, and then you get a biopsy, they're pretty thorough with confirming whether it is cancerous. And it's just, you know, that little prick is just so important. And I have to say, I have become one of the silver badge wearing brigade to say get tested, because, you know, what harm can it do? And then if you don't have it, then you know it can do a lot of harm. So, you know, it's a cancer and it can kill. So, you know.
You've made a healthy choice. Thank you for choosing Radio Glamorgan.
But my brother's out there in the van.
Just a little brick.
Oh, you know him then, do you?
So as we speak, you're due to have the surgery in a couple of weeks. Building up to that, how are you and yourself?
Yeah, well, firstly, I'm fine. I mean, well, it's a little different for me because I have had surgery in the abdomen before for other reasons. So I kind of know what to expect. But, yeah, you know, it's always a little daunting when you know you're going to be have some surgery. What they do is tell you all about how the surgery works and what they do, which is quite interesting if you're into that sort of thing. So it kind of, you know, you know you're obviously going to be out. You're not going to know anything about it until you wake up again. So and for me personally, I just, you know, you just have to put your trust in the guys who are doing it, because they've done so many. You know, as I say, 52,000 men a year get diagnosed with it. So they do know what they're doing. The surgery is actually, if you do opt for the surgery, they do it with these robot things where they control it from a computer. So it's all hands off.
So is it keyhole?
It's keyhole, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it's not like a Yale lock, believe me. But they call it keyhole. But you know, you can have different therapy. You can have you go for sessions where they zap you with a little bit of I don't know. I think there's three different methods. I think one is sort of heat and one is freezing. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. And there's another option, which is brachytherapy, where they can implant radioactive seeds into the prostate, and then it kind of zaps you from the inside rather than the outside. For various reasons, I wasn't eligible for that due to the nature of my urine flow, apparently. But you know, it's an option for some people. And, they talk you through it all, and they give you you go away and you make a decision, as I said.
Final question, and you've more or less answered this already, but there's no harm at all in repeating it. You and I are brothers. I know you well, and usually you're a very private person. So why now have you decided to speak out about your cancer diagnosis?
I think it's important. I think, you know, I don't think there's any harm in hiding it. I think the other thing is that if you don't talk about it, you kind of bottle it all up inside, and you feel really sad about yourself and feel really down. And there's no point, because you can carry on living a normal life. You know, what's the point? And if you talk about it, then other people can listen, and other people, you know, I'm not concerned about that. I'd rather people listen. Also, and I know you as my brother are quite like this as well, Andrew, that you like to talk about things, and it is literally not to bottle it up inside. I don't think that's healthy, and I think that makes you feel worse. And so other people, and you could share stories as well. You know, you find other people who are, once you start talking, other people can start, who have gone through it as well, can start talking as well. And you can share experiences. And I think that's healthy. Should we say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. So I'm not worried. And then, you know, the more I talk, the more people might say, maybe I should get tested, which, you know, do it. Just do it.
Well, it took me about 2 hours to phone my doctor after you told me a diagnosis. So I've had my test done.
You have?
Yeah, straight away.
Very
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
Well done.
Although it was a bit strange. I spoke to the reception, explained what I wanted. And bearing in mind that because of blood pressure, I have regular blood tests anyway.
Yeah.
They wouldn't put me in until I'd spoken to a GP first. And that was actually a really good conversation because we spoke for about a quarter of an hour, talked about you, obviously family history, had it done. And it's the only time, they always say to you when you have a blood test, or the results will be back next Thursday. And because my blood tests are routine, I never ring. If there's a problem, they'll ring me. But on this occasion, I did. And thank goodness it was fine.
Yeah. You can also find your results online if you not online, you know, there's the patient access.
Yeah.
I'm sort of surprised. Maybe it's because you're under 60. I don't know, but I'm kind of surprised that you had to have a chat with the GP first. I know my friend, you know, we were talking about it, and he said that his practice, which is actually in the same building as my practice, they were really reluctant to do it.
Yeah.
But mine, thankfully, you know, when you know, I was there for a routine blood test, and I just said to the nurse who was taking, healthcare assistant who was taking the blood, I said, can you do PSA as well? And the only thing, you know, the only thing that would stop me having it was if I'd been cycling or horse riding or had sexual intercourse the night before. Those were the only things. So otherwise, yeah, you know, it was a bit of a, she looked a bit surprised that I wanted one, but she did it. Thankfully, she did it. So I think you know, you just insist, really.
Mm.
Especially if you're, I mean, yes, 50 to 60. I think more so over 60. I think you said this at the beginning of this session. More so over 60, definitely if you're over 70, because then, you know, it gets even worse. And definitely, I think, if you're of black African ethnicity, because it's, you know, it's, 1 in 8 men are diagnosed with prostate cancer. I think it's in the UK. I think it's 1 in 4 for black African men. So that's the difference. So, yeah, just do it. Just do it. Go for that little prick.
To clarify some of the things that we've discussed on one or two others, prostate cancer is diagnosed based on symptoms, blood tests, PSA, as we mentioned, and a rectal examination by a doctor. Sometimes other tests are required when the diagnosis is suspect, including MRI, CT scan, bone scan, and a prostate biopsy. The PSA blood test is not an absolute test for prostate cancer. In other words, if it is elevated, it does not necessarily mean that you have prostate cancer. Other things such as infection, etc., can also cause the levels to go up. GPs advise patients to have a PSA test every 2 to 3 years when they're aged over 50, younger if there is a positive family history. Prostate cancer can be treated in a number of ways, including hormone therapy, radiotherapy, and surgery. In low-grade prostate cancer with few symptoms and no evidence of spread, it is often treated by what is known as watchful waiting. In other words, the patient will not have any treatment and just have a regular PSA blood test and assessment with a specialist. The situation can often go for many years before any intervention is required. In summary, prostate cancer is common, often existing without any symptoms. The earlier it's diagnosed, the better, so it is important to be aware of the symptoms and requesting a PSA blood test if over 50. Men are generally very bad at going to the GPs, especially to discuss embarrassing symptoms. Men should man up and be prepared to go through the embarrassment of discussing these matters and potentially save their lives. And anyway, as David said, the PSA test, it's only a little prick. David, we started with a bit of Del Boy, and after a very serious subject, we've chosen a song lighthearted to end with.
I just want to say, I was going to say this at the beginning, but I didn't. I was just going to, for people who are still wondering what the hell the prostate is, you described it as something the size of the walnut. I heard of a very good analogy, actually, which was brilliant, which was imagine a sort of takeaway coffee cup or milkshake cup, you know, with a straw through the middle. All right, picture that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, get yourself a walnut. Okay, drill a hole through the middle of the walnut and hold it and pass it over the straw. Okay, so it's sitting on top of the coffee cup,
yeah,
or just underneath it. Okay, then turn the whole lot upside down. All right, picture that.
Yeah.
Okay. So the coffee cup is your bladder, okay?
Right.
The straw is your urethra, which links the bladder to the, the outside world through your penis. Yes, that's where your urine flows through.
Yeah.
The walnut is your prostate, okay? That's almost literally what it looks like in your body. And then as it grows, that prostate, which it does with age anyway, then it you know, it's obviously going to start squeezing the straw, and that's when your urine stops flowing. So that's a nice image, isn't it?
Yeah, lovely.
So let's end on a light-hearted note, because I know I've brought the tone down a little bit. Let's have The Laughing Policeman.
Thanks, Dave, and I'm sure everyone listening wishes you well.
Thank you very much.
I know a fat old policeman, he's always on our street. A fat and jolly red-faced man, he really is a treat. He's too kind for a policeman, he's never known to frown. And everybody says he is the happiest man in town. He laughs upon point duty, he laughs upon his feet. He laughs at everybody when he's walking in the street. He never can stop laughing, he says he's never tried. But once he did arrest a man and laughed until he cried. And then he shut his eyes. He opened his great mouth. It was a wondrous sight. He said, I must arrest you. He didn't know what for. And then he started laughing until he cracked his jaw. Chance to meet him when walking round the town. Just shake him by his fat old head and give him half a crown. His eyes will beam and sparkle, he'll gurgle with delight. And then you'll start him laughing with all his blessed might.
You've been listening to Just a Little Prick, a health special for Hospital Radio Glamorgan.